Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Nam namaskritam naram chaivam narottamam devim saraswatim vyasam datho jayamudirayat nastaprayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati utama shloke bhakti bhavati naishtiki.
We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, 7th chapter, 23rd verse. Translations and purports by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, who's Memorial Day we're celebrating this weekend. Memorial Day. Actually, Memorial Day started at the end of the Civil War, around 1865, and then became a day that people in the United States honor all the dead of the various wars. So with Prabhupada, of course, we don't think that he really died in that way, but he just transcended and went on to another dimension, and we feel that he's still very, very alive. So it's different, because glorifying the war dead is a kind of sentiment, but glorifying the spiritual master or the acharya, the founder acharya of ISKCON, is an eternal occupation. And as the great sage said, living or dead, the great acharyas are always alive and always with us. So it's not really the same kind of memorial. It's a living realization that Prabhupada is always present in his vani, as I think everyone has been realizing over the past few days. Anyway, it's a great honor to be here in New Dwarka for this celebration. I've sort of got at the tail end of it, but I can see by the posters and the beautiful signs everywhere and the pictures of Srila Prabhupada and the mood that it's been a very enlivening experience and a time to really honor our founder and try to repay the debt we all owe him and give him the proper glorification that he deserves. So we will continue to glorify him by reading from his teachings, his Srimad Bhagavatam, which he calls the summum bonum of all Vedic literature. This is chapter 23, chapter 7, verse 23, canto 1. Tvam
Adya
Purusha
Sakshad
Ishvara
Prakrite
Para
Mayam
Yudasya
Chichakta
Kaivalye
Stita
Admani
Tvamadya
Purusha Sakshad
Tvamadya
Purusha Sakshad
Ishvara Prakrite
Para
Ishvara Prakrite
Para
Mayam
Yudasya
Chichakya
Mayam
Yudasya
Chichakta
Kaivalye
Stita
Atmani
Kaivalye
Stita
Atmani.
You are the original.
Purusha,
the enjoying personality.
Sakshat,
directly.
Ishvara,
the controller.
Prakriti,
of material nature.
Para,
transcendental.
Mayam,
the material energy.
Yudasya,
one who has thrown aside. One who has thrown aside.
Chit Shaktya,
by dint of internal potency.
Kaivalye,
in pure eternal knowledge and bliss.
Stita,
placed.
Admani,
own self. Translation by Srila Prabhupada.
You are the original personality of Godhead who expands himself all over the creation and is transcendental to material energy.
You have cast away the effects of the material energy by dint of your spiritual potency. You are always situated in eternal bliss and transcendental knowledge. Responsively, you are the original personality of Godhead. Who expands himself all over the creations and is transcendental to material energy. You have cast away the effects of the material energy by dint of your spiritual potency. You are always situated in eternal bliss and transcendental knowledge. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Lord states in the Bhagavad Gita that one who surrenders unto the lotus feet of the Lord can get release from the clutches of nescience. Krishna is just like the sun, and Maya, or material existence, is just like darkness. Wherever there is light of the sun, darkness or ignorance at once vanishes. The best means to get out of the world of ignorance is suggested here. The Lord is addressed herein as the original personality of Godhead. From him, all other personalities of Godhead expand. The all-pervasive Lord Vishnu is Lord Krishna's plenary portion or expansion. The Lord expands himself in innumerable forms of Godhead and living beings, along with his different energies. But Sri Krishna is the original primeval Lord from whom everything emanates. The all-pervasive feature of the Lord, experienced within the material, within the manifested world, is also a partial representation of the Lord. Paramatma, therefore, is included within him. He is the absolute personality of Godhead. He has nothing to do with the actions and reactions of the material manifestation, because he is far above the material creation. Darkness is a perverse representation of the sun, and therefore the existence of darkness depends on the existence of the sun. But in the sun proper, there is no trace of darkness. As the sun is full of light only, similarly, the absolute personality of Godhead, beyond the material existence, is full of bliss. He is not only full of bliss, but also full of transcendental variegatedness. Transcendence is not at all static, but full of dynamic variegatedness. He is distinct from the material nature, which is complicated by the three modes of material nature. He is Parama, or the chief. Therefore, he is absolute. He has manifold energies, and through his diverse energies he creates, manifests, maintains, and destroys the material world. In his own abode, however, everything is eternal and absolute. The world is not conducted by the energies or powerful agents by themselves, but by the potent, all-powerful, with all energies. Om Agyanati Marandasya Garananjana Salakaya Chaksurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupakaram Ayam Tadati Svaparantikam. The verse again, you are the original personality of God who expands himself all over the creations and is transcendental to material energy. You have cast away the effects of the material energy by dint of your spiritual potency. You are always situated in eternal bliss and transcendental knowledge. Arjuna is glorifying the various qualities of the Supreme Lord and mentioning that he is transcendental to the material energy and always situated in eternal bliss and knowledge. So Krishna, by definition, is always transcendental. He's worshipped by his devotees because he raises us out of material thinking, the material atmosphere, material nescience. And therefore, if one concentrates one's energy on the Supreme Lord, one can rise or raise oneself out of the material energy just by associating with Krishna. One can associate with Krishna in many different ways, by worshiping the deity, by seeing the deity, by seeing pictures, by associating with his devotees, by reading his words, by offering him things such as in arti, by performing devotional service, by fulfilling his desires, and by living in an atmosphere that is suffused with spiritual or Krishna consciousness and in which devotees reside. Therefore, it is sometimes recommended that devotees take advantage of spending as much time as they can in places like Vrindavan and Mayapur so that one can soak up the spiritual energy and become compact in thinking about Krishna. Arjuna is an example for many of us because he's in a very ponderous, difficult position as a soldier, and Krishna is very transcendental. So the dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna is very unusual and very instructive. In interfaith circles, there's a big issue that is sometimes referred to as faith in action. Faith in action. How does one have faith in the Supreme Being and at the same time translate that into action, into the material world? So Prabhupada shows the picture for the Bhagavad Gita of Parthasarathi. This is faith in action. Faith is represented by Krishna, who is the Supreme Godhead. He's driving the chariot of Arjuna, who is the fighter, the soldier, the warrior, carrying out his very maybe unpleasant or unusual task, but he's doing it under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Prabhupada shows this picture for many reasons. First of all, he thought it improper to just concentrate on the aspect of Krishna as Gopijana Balabha, as the lover of the gopis, or maybe even as the son of Yashoda and Nanda, and Krishna has many, many other pastimes. But he chose this particular picture of Parthasarathi because, well, there's many reasons. I don't know why Prabhupada chose it really exactly, but he did choose that picture. And one of the reasons, obviously, is that it shows that this Krishna consciousness is not just a philosophy, or that it's just jnana, or a kind of armchair philosophy, that people can sit and read a book in an ivory chamber and become philosophically very astute, or just disappear into the remote recesses of places like the holy places, like Radhakunda, and easily engage in bhajan. That's reserved for the very, very small minority of people who have spiritual realization. And even then, Prabhupada's desire was that we should act, that we should have the ability to maneuver through this material world in a spiritual way. Just like Arjuna, he had to do something very horrible. He had to not only fight, which is in itself against most Vedic principles, principles of nonviolence and ahimsa, but he had to fight with his own kinsmen, with his own family members. He had to attain a kingdom which he didn't even care about getting because he was a very saintly person, very renounced, and very unwilling to accept name, fame, and glory. That was the good quality of Arjuna. So he had to decide so many difficult things that only Krishna could advise him in the form of his words. And these are words of Krishna that we're reading also. They're not just some philosophy, but these are the person Bhagavat speaking. The person Bhagavat is represented in the Bhagavad Gita by Krishna, and in the Bhagavatam and other works by great saints and sages and munis and rishis. So sometimes, not too seldom, Prabhupada referred to his devotees as pure devotees. The idea being that if one is faithful to the disciplic succession, then one can act on the platform of pure devotion. If one is not carrying some ulterior motive, has some other selfish or material desire to fulfill. Therefore, as representatives of Krishna, sometimes it's difficult to understand how Krishna's instruction, Krishna's teachings translate into practical maneuvering or action. How do we live in this material world, which is very difficult, especially in this age, it is said, Kale Dosha Nidhe Rajan Astiheka Mahadguna Kirtana Deva Krishnasya Mukta Sangha Parambaja, that there is only in this whole Kali Yuga, this time that we're living in, there's only one thing that's good. Asti Eka Mahadguna. There's only one thing, it is said, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and that is the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. So sometimes we may appear to others to be a bit fanatical and single-minded and escapists, that we're just concentrating on the other world and that we don't really care what happens in this world. But in this battle of Kurukshetra and in this instance that we're reading about right now, Arjuna has to make some very difficult decisions based on transcendental knowledge. He has to translate the transcendental knowledge of the words of Krishna into action. So it's very difficult because one is supposed to be very one-pointed. So the idea that the material thinking is that if we concentrate everything on one thing, Vyavasayat Mikabur, Ekeha Kudanandana, that if we're very single-pointed, Bahoshaka Yanantascha, and we're not thinking about many different things, that we will be unable to act in a variegated way. Now here Krishna is described by Prabhupada as being variegated, or that he says transcendence is not at all static but full of dynamic variegatedness. This means that in the spiritual world, it's not as some faith confessions might think, that you simply lay back in a cloud, play a lyre, and associate with the angels, and your whole family is all up there with you, and you're all happy, and you can go to the coffee shops or whatever. Some people have this kind of a conception that that's what the Svargalokas are like, or that's what heaven is like. And even in our own tradition, sometimes people think that way. But we understand from Bhagavatam and from Nectar Devotion that the spiritual world is full of transcendental varieties, and that everything that we experience in this material world, all the emotions, all the thoughts, all the feelings, all the activities, they have their origin in the spiritual world. And while we think that we're very diverse, we have thousands of different websites, hundreds of different channels, millions of different options, we can do anything we want, so much freedom. There is millions and millions of times more options and freedoms in the spiritual world, because this is the source of all the different varieties that we experience in the material world. So the spiritual world is not an empty, singular mess of light and goodness and happiness. It's all those things, but they all come from the many varieties. Just like in the flowers that we offer, there are many different scents, many different varieties, just in a simple flower garland. And in the various activities that Krishna asks us to perform, Yaidam Paramam Guyam Madbhaktesha Vidashyati, he says that this is what pleases me the most, if you bring people to Krishna consciousness. So when people are hearing about the spiritual world, that every step is a dance, every word is a song, all water is like nectar, they are not only enthralled but amazed that a spiritual existence can have so much variety and can have so many different ways of pleasing the Supreme Lord. So in this world, sometimes we're faced with very, very difficult dilemmas. And our modern society, which is very materialistic or reductionistic, to be very specific, is a society in which we are asked not to be judgmental. Almost every type of perversion these days, at least in this country, has we might call it a support group. It's okay. Or so many people that are condemned for heinous crimes like serial killing, there's been a lot of these lately, are said to be sick. They're ill. It's not their fault. It's society's fault. It wasn't my fault that I murdered 10 people, but it's society's fault. So this is the criminal mentality. There's people on death row who are absolutely convinced it wasn't their fault. So, but this is the system, that this is the way we're kind of raised. I think it's still the system in academic circles, at least when I was in college, that you present all the evidence, but you don't make a judgment, at least not openly. You don't make a judgment because then you're guilty. You made a value judgment. That's wrong. I remember in some of my classes, the students used to say, but that's a value judgment. And then we had to retrace our steps and start over again and be more scientific, more clinical, more antiseptic. The argument had to be very close, because if you made a value judgment, you were overstepping the lines of your academic prerogatives. You just couldn't do it. It's not right. And still, this tendency, this method of coming to what is truth is a scientific kind of method based on this reductionism, that there's no aims or values, and judgments aren't good, that everything is just whatever it is, we weigh up the different forces of energy that are vying against each other all the time in nature. There's just a big fight going on out there, and we don't have any answers. So this is the pervasive thinking that has come to rule in our society, unfortunately, that we aren't allowed really to make judgments. So therefore, the concepts of God and religion are considered to be a bit fanatical, especially institutionalized religion. And criminals can go because they're just sick. There was one instance where someone was writing about a 3 or 4 year old who went up and swatted a little child, a toddler, in a what do they call those, prams, and knocked him over. And the mother, instead of chastising her child, said, "What's troubling you, honey? You don't feel well today." So this was observed to be something very strange, that instead of thinking that this is wrong, that it's not right to hit a little baby, but that something was wrong. There was some mental illness there, something going on. So this is part of a kind of a valueless society that we're living in. Anyway, to get back to this verse, Krishna is transcendental, and there was a dispute going on in this chapter. It's a very interesting chapter. Aswatthama committed a very heinous act by slaughtering 5 sleeping children. Now, because it was such a violent act, he deserved to be killed. That according to Vedic injunction. It's not that we just look for different forums and different injunctions and try to find what the different answers are, but that's kind of a scriptural injunction, that if there's death or someone is a child or sleeping, enemy is without a weapon, can't be killed. Nowadays it's very popular to look for different ways to find the truth. It's a kind of what they call in legal parlance shopping, forum shopping. This happened recently when the talk show star Oprah Winfrey was sued, and she lost her case in the federal court. I mean, she won her case in the federal court against the meat industry, and then they sued her again in a state court. They call this the forum shopping. So also spiritually, sometimes we look for answers in different ways. We look to the material world. There was a conversation that took place between Maharaj Yadu and the Avaduta, which is described in the 11th canto. Krishna describes to Uddhava. And this Avaduta was explaining how he learned things from the material world, how he got the Siddhanta, got the conclusion of what is correct, what is right, by looking at nature, looking at insects, looking at animals. So he describes, for example, how sometimes people are victimized by their senses. And he described how he learned from the different insects and animals. So one was the fish. The fish is caught by the fisherman's bait by its tongue. And the instruction there was if we follow the dictates of the tongue to eat something very luxuriously, then we will be victimized, just like the fish is victimized by the hook inside the bait. If one becomes attached to eating very luxurious foodstuffs, refuses things that are simple and only wants to eat luxuriously, this is very bad for one's spiritual life. He talked about the bee. The honeybee, which just gets enough for its subsistence. It doesn't hoard. Well, I think there were 2 types of honeybees. The type that builds the honeycomb, which is hoarding, and then the type that just eats a little and goes away. So the instruction there was that one just takes what one needs, doesn't keep anything extra, and goes away. That in the material world, one is very great if one just takes what one needs to keep the body and soul functioning nicely together. And then the Avaduta talked about the python who lies on the ground with its mouth open and just takes whatever food is given. This is compared to the madukari, which is a way of just taking a little bit of grain from that is left over from or cast away. One should only eat very simply and live very plainly. He talked about the elephant, which is victimized by its desire for the opposite sex. The elephant is captured when a female elephant is displayed before it, one who is in captivity, and a big hole or pit is constructed with grass over it so the elephant doesn't see the big pit, and going after the female elephant falls into the pit and is thus captured. he described the deer. The deer is captivated by beautiful sounds. The hunters have a way of blowing something with a horn that sounds like another deer. And it's made it to a very beautiful sound. The deer likes the nice sound. It's captivated, and it comes into vision, and the hunter captures it. So this is also considered to be detrimental to spiritual life, to become attached to beautiful-sounding things. Just like sometimes beautiful music captivates us. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was very strict, Prabhupada said. He only let the devotees use kartals and mridanga. And sometimes we become very, very captivated by the beautiful sounds that we hear. Sometimes it's the rock music, sometimes classical music, sometimes some beautiful Shakespearean voice might be. But that's also another form of attachment. We become attached to seeing very beautiful things. So there are different... Oh, Prabhupada once mentioned about the dog. The dog can teach us... once I was in Montreal, it was in 1968, and Prabhupada was there, and he was sitting out in front of his apartment building. The devotees had him an apartment. And we were sitting on the sidewalk and listening to him talk. So one man came and sat down and just kind of sat on the street, on the sidewalk, and started listening. And at one point he said to Prabhupada, he said that Prabhupada was talking about these different ways we can learn from nature. So he was saying that we can learn from children, because children are all very innocent and they have a way of making us feel very happy. So there's a lot to learn from them. And Prabhupada said, no, we can't learn anything from children. And he was very shocked. What do you mean? I thought children were very innocent and sweet. He said, no, we can't learn from children, but you can learn from a dog. And he was really shocked, because he thought, wow, can't learn from kids, but we learn from a dog. How is that? And Prabhupada said, we can learn from a dog faithfulness. We can learn from a dog fidelity. And so he said, well, how? He said, the dog is so faithful to its master. He has so much trust in him. He's so obedient that even if the master decides to shoot him with a gun, Prabhupada gestured like this, the dog will be faithful right up until the moment the master pulls the trigger. So then he's, yes, you're right. So there are different things we can learn. But ultimately, as Arjuna is saying, there's the siddhanta, or the proper knowledge that one has to learn from all these things, but learn in relation to what is being instructed by the Supreme Lord. Therefore, we have a three-point check and balance system of Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu. Sometimes it is very difficult to ascertain what the Supreme Lord wants us to do. Is this a reflection of the spiritual world, or is this a perverse aspect of the spiritual world? Just like we were reading here, that in the sun is the origin of shadow or darkness. Without sun, there could not be such a thing as darkness or shadow. And yet, it has its origin. Darkness has its origin in the sun. So similarly, evil has its origin in the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord likes to fight sometimes. Not very often, but he does. There was something I read, I think it was in the Conversations book, where Prabhupada was on an airplane, and the pilot came and sat down next to him. And he asked him if everything comes from God. And he said, yes. So then what about evil? How does evil come into the world? The prophet said evil also comes from God. But evil is like he called the backside of God. And he said, just like when you're flying into the west, there's a shadow. When you stand in the sun, there's a shadow. When you're going west, you're chasing the sun, so it's always light. And when you're going the other way, east, it's night, day, night, day, night, day. So he was explaining to him in terms that he could understand that sometimes there is dark and sometimes there is light, due to where you are, which way you are going, which way you are standing in relationship to the sun. So Prabhupada said that this pilot was a very intelligent man. He could understand, yes, the darkness originally, or evil, comes from God. So it is said, it seems like there is something taking place on two different levels. On the one hand, there is association with the Supreme Person, the understanding that everything has its origin in the Supreme in the spiritual world, and yet there is duality in the material world. So how does one bring that spirituality, that singularity, into the duality of the material world and make it work? It can be very, very difficult. So here's an instance where, as we read a little bit later on in this chapter, the Supreme Lord gave Arjuna some advice. He advised him to kill the miscreant, Aswatthama. He killed these sleeping children, and he was guilty of a very bad, very heinous act. And Arjuna also pledged that he would avenge this sin by bringing the head of the perpetrator of this horrible crime to Draupadi to avenge her dead sons. So there was a difficulty here because Draupadi didn't want him killed. She appealed that this Aswatthama, he's the son of a Brahmin, and he was, Dronacharya was actually the teacher of Arjuna. He's a Brahmin, he's not only a Brahmin, but he's a teacher. And if we destroy a Brahmin or if we kill a Brahmin, that's against spiritual injunctions, even though it may be for spiritual injunctions to kill an aggressor who killed without someone without weapons, who are children who are sleeping. Still, we don't kill a Brahmin. He's your teacher and he's a Brahmin, and all of our family will be destroyed. So Bhima wanted to side, he did side with Arjuna in his original intention to kill him. Yudhisthira, who was very saintly and is known as Dharmaraj, always protecting religious principles, was looking at the whole situation and thought that Draupadi was right, that he cannot be killed. So this dilemma grew, and sometimes it actually gives us a bit of an indication of how in the spiritual world sometimes there appear to be conflicting opinions, or even in Shastra, there are conflicting instructions. So therefore, we have a way to check these things with Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu, and we have to do the proper research to see what is thought by Guru, what is done in Shastra, what is recommended by Sadhu. So Krishna said to Arjuna that he was going to leave this to him. They have to decide that there are different injunctions, that he should be killed, that he should be not killed, and you have to satisfy. You have to keep your pledge. You have to satisfy me. You have to satisfy Draupadi. You have to satisfy Bhima. So you now can act. So here it is described that Arjuna acted by using his, what Prabhupada calls his sharp intelligence. So the meditation was, of course Krishna was there, was what to do. Because he's telling me what to do, but he's not telling me what to do. He's saying to do two different things. So he had a very difficult situation before him. And he was asked to use his intelligence to figure it all out. So sometimes we have to do this as representatives of the Supreme Lord. We're faced with dilemmas in life, and we have to decide. So we have this kind of meditation. What would Prabhupada say if he were here? We were thinking about Prabhupada all weekend. What do we do? How do we act? Who do we go to? Well, we go to Guru, we go to Sadhu, we research very diligently in the Shastras to find out what is the right course of action. And it can be done. And it's the difficulty we face every day. Since he's here, I'm going to mention an incident that took place between Giriraj Maharaj and Prabhupada. And if I get this wrong, please tell me. But he was asking Prabhupada, and in the last meeting they had, if just chanting Hare Krishna would be sufficient to see to the well-being of Srila Prabhupada's movement. Maybe you can tell this story, because you tell it exact, and it's probably more relishable.
Srila Prabhupada was in his last weeks in Vrindavan, and I was taking rest on the roof of the Gurukul building, and in the middle of the night someone woke me up and said, Prabhupada is calling you. So I rushed down, and Srila Prabhupada asked, so do you think the movement will continue after I'm gone? So I said, well, Srila Prabhupada, as long as the devotees are sincere and chant their rounds and follow the principles, the movement will go on. And Srila Prabhupada paused and said, organization, intelligence and organization. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
So Prabhupada created a big organization and requires a lot of intelligence to bring spiritual thinking into an organization. Some people think that just by virtue of being an organization alone, it must be irretrievably corrupt. They say absolute power corrupts absolutely. But there are many great institutions of the world that have persevered over decades and generations and centuries and provided a shelter and a support system for people, spiritual organizations and mainly. But Prabhupada wanted this one to endure for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, at least for 10,000 years. So organization and intelligence. Our meditation is, what would Prabhupada say, what would he do? And we have the books, we have the sadhus, we have the gurus to help us. So Arjuna used his sharp intelligence to take off the jewel from Aswatthama. When a kshatriya's jewel is removed, he becomes humiliated. He cut his hair off in patches. He drove him out of his camp. And this is actually also scripturally correct, because to do these three things to a kshatriya, it is a punishment for a relative of a Brahmin, actually. That is the injunction that he invoked. It is allowed to do all these things. And it is said that Aswatthama is still wandering around somewhere. Still doesn't have a place to go. So this was his sharp intelligence. He figured out a way to satisfy everybody, to keep within the scriptural injunctions, and to fulfill his vow, and to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, in this material world, although there is a great deal of variation, there's a great deal of difficulty, that one can still be Vyavasayat Mika Buddhir, aka Kuru Nandana. One can still be very fixed in Krishna consciousness and know how to act, not get entangled in material nature. Bhogaishvarya Prasaktanam, Taya Prakrita Chetasam, Vyavasayat Mika Buddhir, Samado Navi Diyate. There's another injunction in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, which says that if we become bewildered by the material things, if we don't see the material things from the viewpoint of Shastra Chakshu, from the Shastras, if we don't see that there is a conclusion in everything, then in the mind of such a person, pure devotional service will never take place. So the injunction is to be singularly pointed and fixed in our consciousness, see the whole material world and everything around us as an instruction, as a way to see Krishna everywhere. Krishna is in everything. Pariksit was always looking for Krishna. And to be absolutely unswayed and unswayable in our Krishna consciousness. So I'll read the verse and we can stop there. Tamadya purusha sakshat ishvara prakrite para mayam vyudasya chakya kaivalye astita admani. You are the original personality of Godhead, who expands himself all over the creation and is transcendental to material energy. You have cast away the effects of the material energy by dint of your spiritual potency. You are always situated in bliss and transcendental knowledge. I think we have time for one comment or question. A simple answer is to say that we have Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu. Sometimes we may be reluctant to associate with those who we consider more advanced than us, or maybe guru is not available or distant. We have Shastra to research a lot of things. And if we look at everything that Prabhupada wrote and said about a particular thing, it's very helpful. Rather than just, in other words, it's not something that can be done overnight. It's something that requires a great deal of thought and consultation to studiously go over Prabhupada's thinking about many different things or about a particular thing. It may require more than just searching for one word in a folio. It may require talking to more than one person who we look up to and getting more than one instruction from our guru, Shiksha, Diksha, or the many gurus that surround us. So this is, and as I said, it's a kind of meditation. Like we sometimes we'll meditate. What would Prabhupada say? What would he do if he were here? A meditation isn't something that it's like electric shock. It's something that we have to think about and come to the right conclusion by consultation and maybe by having lots of people together to meet. This is the way Prabhupada wanted his society to run, to evolve. The different things that need to be done, the different groups or committees or task forces or whatever, to ensure that we're preserving the culture, we're preserving the teachings, and yet at the same time we're not ignoring the fact that we have to live in the material world and be a movement that preaches and that converts and changes the materialism of the material world into spiritual consciousness. So both things are there. I realize that they appear to be in constant tension, but the instruction, like this one given to Arjuna, it's difficult to fulfill all the time, but we have to create a spiritual environment in a material world, and that takes a great deal of study and thinking and consultation. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.